You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls.
Hey, gang. Welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And we are two unwed women taking a walk down Wisteria Lane of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. It's been a while since it's been on the air, but we felt there was a lot that we could learn from the early 2000s and how these housewives get along with their lives, you know, what it really means to just be a stay-at-home mom, be a caretaker, be a homemaker. Haven't learned any of that, but we both did discuss today that we are a little bit jealous. We may have dogged on them too hard, like early on about not having jobs. We have reached it's early February, and we're feeling like, man, maybe that's really nice. Just be stay at home mom.
I guess we're feeling a little bit of burnout in the working world. I don't know.
I was talking about taking days off, and I was like, I haven't taken a day off. Like, what's wrong with that? I haven't taken a whole day off this year. My boyfriend was like, it's February. It's not that long. It's like
the beginning of February,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. He's like, it's the end of January. Like, you didn't make it that far.
You're like, damn, okay. Give you some support.
Yeah. We have unlimited. I can take off whatever. And my boss was really supportive of it. I was like, I'm trying not to take too much time off because I'm going on like a longer vacation soon. So we'll see. I think I'll need it. But other than that, yeah, we pretty much watch an episode and recap it. Before that, we take you through a little bit of what was going on before to just get you warmed up, remind you of what's been happening in this season. But this season's been so piecemeal, I don't even think it really matters at this point what's been going on.
There's my notes on like last week are so short, like because they're pretty short, easy stories lately.
Yes, so weird. Yeah, it's weird. It's been a weird one. So we go through that. We go recap our regular episode. Today it's season 2, episode 15. Thank you so much. I love the titles this season.
I know.
And then we do a review based on several different scales, one being Fuck, Marry, Kill, a Housewife of the Week, and then a 5 Apple rating. We rarely give out a 5, though. I've been giving high 4s, but they don't deserve it.
I know. I've been trying to, like, scale myself, honestly, because I was only giving in the 4 range. And I was like, the scale isn't 4 to 5. So I needed to, like, expand my horizons a little bit.
Okay, they all felt good. There was all quality things happening. But
yeah, no, I've been enjoying it. So I guess that speaks to my enjoyment. But I'm like, I want, like, the standout episodes to stand out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of this show called Sheer on Netflix. It's a reality show that follows a community college on their way to Daytona Beach, which is like the biggest cheer competition. But they're obviously getting scored on like a scale of 10. And this coach is talking about how they need to be strategic with like the scorecard and do strategic cheerleading. And I'm like, I need to do strategic scoring on these episodes.
That's a great way to put it.
I've just been like, I feel like all those had like heartfelt moments or something. I'm like 4.5, but it was like Susan sucked or something. I need to be deducting more every time Susan sucks. We're getting a little tired of her.
I just want to like, I guess it's important to remember for me at least, like there are 4 stories. So even if 3 of them are great, you know, like I do need to dock points when they're not giving me a well-rounded
more
episode.
More than like 0.25 or something.
Yeah. Cause like a whole 1/4 of the story not being good. It's a bit brutal.
Yeah. Well, if my voice sounds extra sexy or stuffy today, I've been recovering from a gnarly sinus infection that I don't think my doctor sent anything to the pharmacy, and I've been too lazy to call to remind them. So bear with me, and my voice sounds like scraggly.
You sound great, don't even worry about it.
Good. Last episode we can talk a little bit about what went down. A big part of it was some slave labor that just happened to sneak up, you know.
I know, I asked it in our Instagram caption, but I was like, how much like slave labor seems to be a big part in the lives of people in Fairview, like wherever the fuck their town is located. And I'm a little concerned. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I've ever met anybody that had slave labor, but this seems to be pretty common.
You don't know that you met anybody with slave
really
labor.
I really hope not. None of my friends are honestly rich enough to buy a slave.
None of us are rich enough to have that going on.
But yeah.
Yeah, that was going on with Gabby and Carlos. They originally set out to help this poor young woman, and she ends up loving Gabby so much and loving their house that she decides to stay.
Yeah.
So that's that on that.
Yeah, essentially, that's what it is. Gabby manipulates her way into getting a servant, basically.
Yeah. And then Lynette eats, like, pounds of raw meat.
Bacon, raw bacon. Like,
yeah.
Extra gross raw meat.
Like, that scene is iconic. I don't know that I could get that out of my head personally. It's pretty gnarly. So she eats pounds of raw bacon because Ed and Tom have been doing this, like, frat boy challenge, like, going back and forth with, like, these pranks. Like, Tom eats something out of the – eats a donut out of the toilet. He's doing all these things to impress Ed, to, like, get on his good side. And then Lynette's just had it because it's a professional workplace. And she's like, can we just fucking do work and, like, not do this? And then she bets Ed – to, like, make the prank stop and win. But his prank isn't a prank. It's brutal. He just makes her eat, like, 5 pounds of raw bacon.
It's just hazing. Like, straight up, like, not even a prank.
This place is an HR nightmare. From everything I've learned about whatever Lynette's job is, it's, like, they're really the worst. So.
Oh, yeah.
That's what goes on with Lynette.
Mm-hmm. And then for our other ladies. So, Brie basically, like, breaks into the Applewhite's home, and because now that, like, Betty has this shit hanging over her because she knows about Andrew hitting Mrs. Solis, she kind of wants to get leverage back, and she and Danielle kind of have, like, a little conversation where Danielle's like, well, why don't you just go ask her? And Bree's like, are you stupid? And then proceeds to call her stupid in a very poetic way. But she goes over and she meets Caleb, and she talks to him. And he's, like, sweet and calls her pretty. It does get a little creepy at one point. But later when she confronts Betty, Betty just, like, comes clean and tells her what happened, which is that Caleb beat a girl to death with an axe.
But he loved her.
Yeah, he loved her.
And he thought that she was pretty, too.
Yeah. So, basically, like, it was Matthew's, like, ex on and off girlfriend, whatever you want to call it. And Caleb, like, asked her to meet at the lumberyard, which we discussed, like, obviously don't do that.
Bad place if he's asking you to meet there. Don't meet him.
Yeah. And he calls her pretty and she calls him a freak and it escalates and he kills her. And so she and Brie kind of bond over their need to protect their children. And it, like, they ended up, like, kind of holding hands with it. It was actually a very sweet moment.
Yeah, it was emotional. It's sweet. I cannot get a cloud on any of that. They had a heart to heart.
Yeah. And it was, like, you know, coming to this understanding that they both have children that have done pretty horrible things. But as mothers, yeah, they have that, like, need to protect. And then, Susan. So, as we've discussed, she's got no health insurance, and somehow she had an MRI and kept going to the hospital, and that never came up. She decides that she needs to get married to get health insurance, and Carl and Edie end up helping her. Edie, I guess, you know, she actually is helpful. I'm like, I don't really know what Edie's intentions were, but she actually does find someone for Susan to marry, and it ends up being this gay guy who, when they go to the chapel in a strip mall, his partner is, like, really upset by it, and they get into a big fight, and he kind of storms out. And then at the end, Susan and Carl decide that they're going to get married, and they're not going to tell Edie, because let's just make it more complicated for absolutely no reason.
Yeah, Edie found that guy really fast. Yeah. It was, like, impossibly fast.
And all I could think of is that she just wanted to get Susan to stop bugging Carl for help. But regardless, that was actually really helpful. So, like,
yeah, I'm not going to knock her for that. Solid. Yeah. I don't care why she did it. She did what Susan
needed.
Yeah,
she fucking did it. Yeah. So, yeah. And then that was kind of Edie's role in the episode as well, was helping Susan. And then for the Applewhites, it was just kind of tied in with Bree's story there. So we kind of already went over that. And then last but not least, we did get a little bit of Paul-Zach action, kind of. Not really. Noah, who is the old guy that's dying, he confronts Mike over the fact that he has a grandson because he got that note slipped to him. And he basically gives Mike an ultimatum, and he's like, you have 2 days to bring him to me.
And yeah, and Mike's that, like, I guess that's what I have to do.
Yeah, he's like, okay.
So, yeah, I got you. So, fun episode. Not obviously super memorable besides the meat scene for me. Maybe the cold open. I did enjoy the cold open. I will never forget that, where they're talking about this chick. And Bree is like, there's no way that she does this on her own. Because she tells everybody. It was cool. And then the FBI raids the party.
Yeah.
So loved that. But overall, not super memorable. So hoping that today is like one step up or two or five, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's where we left off. But you know what time it is. It's Desperate Deed time.
Desperate Deeds.
You said you were locked and loaded. So I'm going to let you go first.
It's not a, like, super great one or extra or anything, but speaking of being burned out at work, like, my second week, one of my things I have to do is we have, like, Red Bull coolers everywhere where we stock it, and I was stocking it, and all the managers were up at a meeting in the conference room, so it was just me down there, and I don't know if you guys know this, but Red Bull cans are, like, really thin, and I, like, went to open, like, the case, and I stabbed one of them, apparently, and it literally exploded all over myself, my desk, the floor. Like, it was fucking everywhere. Like, and it's sticky, and it's just, it was awful. So I was desperately, this is where it becomes desperate, scrambling to get this cleaned up before the managers, like, finished their meeting upstairs, or one of them came down to go to the bathroom, because I just didn't know them like that. And it got in my hair, so my hair was, like, sticky and wet. So I was, like, trying to, like...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was, like, a small 8-ounce can. It got everywhere. I was, like, using, like, those shitty, like, paper towels that come out of, like, the, you know, in, like, work bathrooms to, like, try and, like, dry my hair. And then one of our drivers got back, and he saw me, and he was, like... Did a Red Bull explode? I'm like, yeah. He's like, that happens all the time. He's like, we call it a Red Bull shower. And I'm like, okay, well, at least it's not like
Red Bull shower.
Apparently it's like it happens. Cause like when they open it with like box cutters or stuff, sometimes it'll catch.
Oh God.
And like, yeah, but like the can, I mean, it was awful. So that was really fun. None of the managers knew about it though. So I did get away with it, folks, but that was a really, really embarrassing way to get going there.
Is that the start of the day?
It was like, maybe 10 a.m. So
oh God.
Not the beginning, but I still had a lot of the day.
That's early. Too early to be having Red Bull because it like smells.
Mm-hmm. And it's smelled sticky. like an alcoholic almost, but like a Red Bull addict. Like it was great. It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, I have a different. I'm gonna go in a different direction. I can't think of any spillage stuff that's happened to me recently. I can think of a million times I've showed up underdressed somewhere, including this weekend, but I didn't do anything desperate to fix it.
Okay.
All right. I don't know if this is desperate or not. This isn't what I was going to say, but I did go to dinner this weekend with one of my girlfriends. I loved it. It is maybe desperate, but we went and like had this dinner at a friend from out of town, and I met up with my other two girlfriends and we had a great dinner. It was super fun. We just talked about our pets, our boyfriends or whatever, just had a girl's night, drank some margs. And then afterwards we're like, I guess we should go somewhere. It was like that time of night. You don't really know if it should end or not. Like you're not sure what the next steps are. It's a Friday. So you should go out, but we're in our late 20s, so we're also just like, maybe we should just go to bed. Like, I don't know.
You're in that weird, like, period where you're young, but, like, I just not always, 21 anymore.
Yeah, where we're not doing all-nighters, but my friend is at the table, and she's like, I mean, I did bring a going-out shirt. And I was like, what? And she's like, she literally lifts up one shirt and there's like a ratchet shirt underneath it with like,
I love this.
Like the boob, like you can kind of see some boobage. Like,
okay.
It's a club shirt underneath like a sweater. And she's like, I just wore this underneath just in case I wasn't sure what the vibe was going to be. And I respect how prepared she was.
I love that.
And I need to be that desperate with my outfits these days because I have... So many times when I've told Jordan this, I've showed up underdressed. It's like unbearable. I think I've even said it on the podcast a couple, like I did it again this weekend. I just didn't bring the right clothes with me. And I get stuck like looking like a schlub and all my girlfriends are like looking so cute. and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I just, well, I'm not even with you guys. Don't even, I won't even pretend.
You're like, I'm old to the point now where like, I didn't even think, like it didn't even occur.
I like to be comfy. What can I say?
I'm the same way. I feel
I
you.
I like to be comfortable. So yeah, I think it, I'm not going to call it desperate in a bad way, but I need to start being that desperate with my wardrobes to impress. But she had a second shirt on underneath ready for the club. And man, that preparedness, I respect it.
I will say that when I went to on a weekend getaway recently, like I did bring a ratchet outfit because it's like with people that go out a lot. Because I was like, I don't want to be caught as the one person who wasn't prepared for this.
Yeah. Those days, that's my New Year's resolution. I didn't have one until now, but it's literally just to not fucking be underdressed anymore. Be it dressed appropriately for every situation and fucking have backups around. I need to have them in my car.
You never know.
Yeah, it's making me insane because I feel like just people are too hot now. Stop being so hot, everyone.
I feel like we got that training, like, now that you, like, aren't working in an office, like, when you work in an office, like, you know, like, oh, maybe people take, like, want to go out after. So you, like, plan for that. But when you're, like, not used to doing that anymore, it makes sense. Like, you just don't.
Yeah, this wasn't a problem ever when I was in the office because I spent, like, 2 hours of my day getting ready every morning. I literally did my hair and makeup every fucking morning. So even if my outfit blew, I still looked, like, cute. So nowadays, I don't spend any time getting ready for anything, and you're lucky to find me in something other than sweats or, like yoga pants.
Honestly, like, I mean, I still go to work, but it's pretty casual, so, like, I don't know. I don't go that – I don't really even wear makeup to work or anything like that.
We hope you're warmed up, and we're excited to watch this episode. You can watch it on Hulu or the Amazon Prime. Like I said, season 2, episode 15, titled Thank You So Much. We are super excited to go watch it, and we'll be here for you right when we're done. But before that, buckle up.
Buckle up.
Valentine's Day for Susan and Dr. Ron is derailed by Edie and Carl. Bree's drinking starts to affect Lynette and her children. Gabby's mother comes to town, but not without ulterior motives. Zach finally discovers who his real dad is. All right. Oh my gosh. So this is yet another Valentine's Day episode. Low-key.
Yeah. This is. That's crazy. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, Valentine's Day is coming up. I think this is going to be released on Valentine's Day.
That's perfect.
So, oh my gosh. Happy Valentine's Day to anybody listening on Monday, Valentine's Day.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day. That's awesome. This comes out on Valentine's Day.
If you're going to Shay Naomi's, let me know.
Yeah, I want to go there.
I feel like it's Italian food, but I don't know.
That or French, right?
Oh, maybe, yeah, Shay.
Yeah, I don't know, but somewhere in there.
Not sure. Maybe it's a real, I'm like, why aren't they going to Saddle Ranch this season at all? The sponsorship ended? Like, what the hell?
A little disappointed, yeah.
I don't know, but so we see Susan and Dr. Ron, which I can't believe she's still dating him, go there. And yeah. Then we also see Carl and Edie go there. But we don't get any, like, I felt like last Valentine's Day episode slapped. Like, even when we reviewed it, I was like, nobody does a Valentine's Day episode. This is great. Mm-hmm. So this one wasn't as heartfelt or cool or anything. We don't get any lame cards. We don't get Mike bleeding out at the table.
I know. Last time was so epic.
We don't get Carl writing a card at his table. I think that's all that happened with Carl. Or not, yeah. Carl. Carlos.
Carlos. Yeah. Sorry. Carlos, you gotta be kidding me that they're naming these characters. They're like all the basic ass names.
They're like one has a K and one has a C. So.
Man. Rough.
Yes, but the story does start with Susan. We get Mary Alice Young talking about Susan at the beginning. She says Susan Meyer believed, which is spelled Mayer, but Susan Meyer believed that the punishment should fit the crime. She came to this conclusion when she discovered her husband Carl had been unfaithful all those years ago, way back. Mm-hmm. Since Carl had destroyed the love she had given him, Susan felt it was only appropriate that she destroy the things that she had given him in return, one by one. And my favorite, because we see a montage, my favorite is she takes her little Subaru and she lays out his golf clubs and, like, reverses over them one by one really slow, or, like, drives over them, bending them all. And I was like, this lady is a savage. Like,
yeah.
If any of your boyfriends golf, you know how fucking anal they are about it. So good for her. And I said, she looks happy doing it. That was my comment. She looks pleased.
She's living her best life.
I want that kind of zen in my life. So now, 3 years after their divorce, Susan was reunited with Carl once again as partners in crime of their own. And they're sitting at the table with Julie, which I would hide this from even my daughter because I would be ashamed of remarrying her father for insurance fraud.
Oh my God, yeah.
Julie even says that. And she's also like, don't fall in love again because the first divorce was enough. Like, they're really just toying with Julie at this point.
I know. No care is really taken by Susan to, like, protect Julie from, like, emotional trauma. Yeah. Like, she's so gung-ho that Zach's gonna murder Julie or whatever. But, like, Susan, you're inflicting quite a bit of damage yourself.
Susan, you're fucking insane. Yeah. So, and then Carl says, like, he, like, closes up his little briefcase. He's like, all right, we're good to go. Insurance kicks in the moment we say I do. And that's literally not how it works.
No, it's not at all how it works.
Yeah, so interesting how, whatever. Okay, so that's how it works in this universe. Like, I mean, what's the healthcare system in Fairview County?
Like, I know. I'm like, I need to move there.
Julie thinks it's a mistake. She can't survive another dramatic divorce, like I said. She's like, don't catch feelings. And then he's like, where's that ring I gave you? You got to look the part. And she, like, Susan's literally, like, she freezes up. And she's like, I don't know. And she's like, that ring was my grandmother's. It was supposed to be Julie's. Like, where the fuck is it? And she's like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I might have thrown it off Route 7, like, one time. I don't know. Like, she literally threw it out the window, which I do think is stupid because you could at least get money for that.
Yeah, I'm like, what is she thinking?
And he's like, trusted you with it. She's like, I trusted you with my heart. And she said, I might have thrown away the ring, but you threw away this marriage. And I don't think it's tit for tat like that, but whatever.
Yeah, no.
Susan believed the punishment should fit the crime. And so did Carl. And he makes her go out with a little metal detector and find the ring, which I appreciate. I can appreciate Carl on that one.
I respected it.
Next, we have the little intro. We get some opening credit there, and then we come back to Bree.
Yes.
And I can let Jordan take away Bree's storyline because it's pretty involved with Lynette. And yeah. So we'll just start from the top as this kind of leads into it. So I'll let Jordan go on from here.
Yeah. So we'll kind of jump, kind of go back and forth between Brie and Lynette just because it is, like, it's chronological, I guess.
Yeah. You'll see.
Basically, we come back and Brie has taken herself out to a quiet dinner in an Italian restaurant where a man is singing opera. And I have to wonder, like, I've never been to a restaurant like that where there's just, like, a guy singing. But this happens in Sex and the City, too. So I'm like, where are these restaurants where you're getting,
I would, like, hate that. I could see myself being at the table, like, not knowing there was going to be a singer. And then a singer comes out and me being like, God, I have to go through the rest of the dinner with this singer.
Yeah. It's really, like, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Leonardo's Bar and Grill, apparently.
So she's chilling. She's drinking her wine. She's listening to music by herself there, and the waiter asks her if she's okay because she's starting to, like, tear up. She says she just, like, orders more wine basically, and the waiter kind of, like, checks in on her, and she tells him that her husband died. I don't understand the timeline at this point because I feel like, how long ago did Rex die? And, like, I don't know.
I was wondering that too. I almost made a note about it because she's like, he passed away
recently.
And then she says he was murdered by her pharmacist. And the guy makes a funny joke and he says, hope you changed pharmacist.
Yeah.
And she's like, my pharmacist committed suicide. So at the point that George committed suicide, I think it was like 2 months out. So I'd say maybe this is month three of Rex being dead.
God, this is a slow timeline then. The show is moving slower than the actual time, like, of it coming out. But anyway, so the waiter, like, basically tells her, like, he thinks she's drank too much and she can leave her car there. It'll be safe. He'll, like, have a cab come get her. And she decides, she asks him, like, how much longer the guy will be singing, and he's like, four more songs. So she's like, well, I'll just have more wine then, like, crack open another bottle, boss.
Yeah. I do have to mention that, like, has anybody ever been like, you, okay, let's say you've been crying in public, mm-hmm. and somebody's been like, well, at least you look pretty when you cry. Has anybody ever said that to you?
No.
Okay. That's happened to me. And I'm always like, how can anybody look pretty when they cry? But I'd have to say Brie did look pretty when she cried.
She did. She just looked like
sobbing.
She looked teared up. I get like Kim Kardashian ugly cry vibes. So I'm like, I can't relate. But so Brie gets home and she straight up collapses on her front lawn and like passes out drunk.
In a mink shawl.
Ruined.
Yeah.
And I honestly, we'll get to it, but so I won't get into it now. But anyway, so she passes out and the next morning Mrs. McCluskey like finds her there and Andrew comes outside and he and Mrs. McCluskey have like a little conversation and he's like, well, I got it. Cause she basically offers to help him and he just turns on the sprinklers. He's like,
Andrew
fuck it.
Living.
Yeah. Yeah. Brie wakes up shook and hungover and like pissed off. Cause she's all wet and her mink is now ruined. Cause fur does not do well.
I know. What the fuck? Like in your mink shawl, you ruined your fucking fur jacket for okay, I guess that's having an alcohol problem, but
yeah, straight up like brutal. Then later Brie is in her home and Danielle and Andrew are kind of giving her a hard time because she clearly has a drinking problem and she's claiming that she took some allergy medication and that's the reason why she got all fucked up and that's why she passed out.
The antihistamine.
Yeah, and like she's very hungover. I was pretty impressed with her hangover acting. She gets to a point where she's like, well, if it makes you feel better, I'll just throw it out. And she, instead of getting rid of the alcohol, she like throws out all her pills.
Yeah, she's like, fine, you want me to suffer from sneezing?
Yeah. And Andrew's like, oh, so like you'd rather drink than like not have allergies. And Brie just kind of stares at him and like he makes a good point though, to be fair. I was like, Brie, you should be listening.
And he's like, how about a little hair of the dog? And
he, yeah, like, he like brings her a bottle
wine and she's like, shut the fuck up. But also, do you think George got her hooked on the mixture of antihistamines and alcohol?
I didn't even think about
he's
that.
He's the first one that gave it to her.
Is that like a thing though? Do you get hooked on that combo?
You can get hooked on anything. I don't know about antihistamines. But I know that like when you have a surgery, you can get hooked on like painkillers and alcohol.
Yeah.
Because I think that has more of a, like, volatile reaction.
I guess, yeah, but now that you say it, I'm like, damn, like, maybe he did get her, like, straight up addicted to that little chemistry set she's been putting inside herself.
Yeah, but Brie did some hard work on her hangover acting. I was like, mm-hmm. legit, that's me when I have a hangover and I'm pretending that I don't. Like,
yeah, no, she did a great job.
And I'm like, oh, I just am tired.
I just feel like if you, like, Brie's so worried about, I did think it was strange, her reaction to all of this, because Brie is like very concerned with what other people think.
Yeah,
like she's very very concerned about her image and she did not seem to care much that she woke up on her lawn like in front of all her neighbors.
I know, it's like everybody fucking saw it, but you can get into that later too.
Yeah,
Mrs. McCluskey doesn't keep this a secret.
No, she does, and I don't think she should, because as we see, Brie's shenanigans get her into more trouble.
She already has a motherfucking DUI.
Oh yeah,
at this point she has a DUI on her record and she's still out here like drinking. I mean, I would assume that her license is revoked even, but she somehow made it to the fucking Leonardo's.
I think you get like, you can get two DUIs before they take your license away.
Okay.
Like the first one you get in trouble.
I'm sure her second one's coming soon.
Yeah. So in the meantime, I'm going to kind of cut over to Lynette here for a minute. Lynette and Tom have to go into work last minute, is what I kind of got from that. For some reason, Tom knew before Lynette did, too.
Oh, yeah. He comes downstairs, and he's like, I'm going into work. And she's like, oh, because Mrs. McCluskey comes over to their house. Yeah. That's why you got that from.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, I'm here to babysit. And Lynette's like, what the fuck? And Tom is, like, frantic and comes downstairs. And he's like, yeah, we have to go to work. And then Lynette pulls him aside and is like, is there no other babysitter? Which, why is Lynette even, like, peeved about this, that Mrs. McCluskey is old? I don't get it. She's like, there are younger people. And she's like, find another babysitter. And then Tom's like, I guess you could tell Mrs. McCluskey to go home. And she's like, we won't be needing you. And Mrs. McCluskey is like, yeah, I heard you, like, through the door. So
yeah, but I just thought it was weird that like Tom was like Lynette's his boss. I was like, why does she seem confused by what's happening? It was just like kind of a strange setup. But anyway,
I don't know.
Yeah, they end up leaving all their kids with Bree. Bree is like hesitant. To be fair, Bree is hesitant. She should have just said she was hungover, but she didn't. And Bree like accepts. And while Tom and Lynette are at work, Bree gets like super overwhelmed by the kids. Like they're being super loud. Penny's a baby, so babies already are just like six kids in one. And then the twins are like trying to make this song, and it's like the worst song I've ever heard. It's just banging around on shit. And they're like, we want our parents to hear it. And Bree's like, oh my God, no, like I can just listen to it. And so they're like, okay. So she like pours herself a glass of wine to like mellow out and listen to their song. I don't know. They don't really show how much she drinks, but she does fall asleep at one point.
I mean, I assume it's the whole bottle if she falls asleep and is like unable to be woken up.
Because she was also super hungover. So I'm like, well, maybe she didn't drink too much. It just passed. I don't know. But regardless, she passes out and she's been drinking. So the boys decide that they want to go find their parents, which is like fucking A. But they like take Penny, load her up in the stroller, and they leave. Next thing we know, Tom and Lynette get a call from this like lady at like a hairstyling place, a salon. And she's like, I think I have something that belongs to you. Cut over to her kid, their kids just like chilling. So Lynette and Tom like frantically run to this beauty salon. Lynette is like trying to kind of like, she's like, we left them in like trusting hands. And this lady's like, well, clearly not trusting enough. Like, what the hell? And like these kids walked like 3 miles. Like, that's pretty fucking far. Like, that means they were gone for a long ass time too. Like, before Bree woke up.
At least 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah. So, like, the lady at the barbershop or hair salon, she starts, like, not berating, but she does start giving them kind of a hard time. And she's like, you know, there's, like, rapists out there and molesters and, like, bad people. Like, your kids could have been hurt. Like, you're lucky we found them. And Lynette starts to get kind of uppity about it and starts to, like, yell. And Tom's like, no, like, you need to chill the fuck out. Like, our kids did do this. Like, we don't have a leg to stand on. Like, shut up.
Yeah, he's like, they walked 3 miles. Like, why are you going to yell at this fucking lady?
And the lady even said, she's like, I could have called CPS on you. Like, I could have called the cops. Like, I decided not to and was a nice person. And Lynette, like, has the audacity to respond with aggression. I'm like, okay, sis. I was going to say, like, part of me, the lady was black. So I'm like, was Lynette, like, treating her different?
That's what I was going to say. I was like, the lady was African-American, and she was fucking right. Because the roles were reversed and, like, a white salon owner found, like, an African-American, a slew of African-American kids, like, roaming the streets alone, you know, she would have fucking pulled some Karen shit probably.
Yeah, so I did wonder if like Lynette like treated her worse like because she was black. I was like, that kind of felt that way. I don't know, but Tom, I'm glad Tom stepped in. And Lynette, like when Tom says that, it kind of snaps her out of it. She's like, you're right, thank you so much, you guys are wonderful, bye.
Yeah, I said, wow, thank God for Tom.
Yeah, Tom really saved the day there, saved her from a real Karen moment.
Yeah,
then Lynette and Tom get home and they ask Bree what happened, and Bree just point blank lies and said like the kids left without her knowing. Porter and Preston, like, tell her the truth. And Lynette is like, why are you guys lying? And she fucking punishes them. And Bree just, like, lets it happen. I'm like, oh, my God, Bree. Like, this is so bad. Like, what the fuck? Then later that day, Mrs. McCluskey talks to Lynette. And she's like, well, Lynette was, or Bree was drunk. And just so you know, if I were the babysitter, I would never drink while watching someone else's kids. And Lynette, like, doesn't believe her at first. She's kind of skeptical, but she still does go over and, like, questions Bree about it. And Bree, like, kind of tries to brush it off. And she's like, no, I wasn't drinking. And then she kind of, like, backtracks. It goes, well, I did have a glass of wine. And Lynette just, like, immediately responds and goes, oh, so you got drunk and passed out, like, while you were watching my kids. I was like, damn, she took the leap. I was kind of impressed.
Well, that was after she talked to Mrs. McCluskey, who warned her that Bree has a drinking problem.
Yeah, because she did say, she told her that she was drunk, but she also told her about, like, how she passed out in her lawn.
Yeah.
Lynette kind of keeps questioning her, and Bree, like, sets down her garbage bag, and it's, like, all bottle sounds. And, because, like, Bree was, like, taking out her trash when that happened. So Lynette, like, kind of, like, goes through her trash, and the next day, or whatever day, maybe it was the same day, Bree comes outside, and there's, like, a bunch of bottles of wine on the porch, just, like, laid out. Yeah. And then a note that says, like, do you still think you don't have a problem? And Bree and Lynette just kind of give each other these looks from across the street.
Epic moment.
It was. I'm, like, proud of Lynette, because I think, like, as Lynette did have a little pill-popping problem last episode, or last season, I think that, like, I think she, like, really does care about Brie. Like, she's obviously pissed off at her, but she's also like, hey, like, you have a problem. Like, I'm fucking worried about you. Listen to your friends. Like, if multiple people are telling you you have a problem, you probably have a problem. But, yeah, like, I just feel like Brie, it's weird to me that Brie is in so much denial because, like I said, she is so, she cares so much about what people think. She's doing a lot of public things to make it obvious she has a problem.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like someone like her would be more secretive about her drinking, but she's not even like.
I think it's just out of control. I don't think that she can control it being a secret anymore. Like,
yeah.
If you're just blacking out, like, and falling asleep on your lawn, you can't really control yourself to the point of being secretive.
I just feel like her passing out in her front lawn is such, like, that's like the last straw kind of thing, but they kind of did it right out the gate here, and the fact that she's still denying it is like, how do you not, like, what's your excuse, man? Yeah. I guess the antihistamine, but
that's a lame excuse. That's an alcoholic it is. Excuse. Yeah,
it is. And I feel like Brie, if it were someone else, she would be so fucking judgy and, like, quick to call them an
she's
alcoholic.
She's already being a bitch when everybody calls her out.
Yeah,
she's like, whatever, you're like. Okay, so when Lynette calls her out, she's like, Lynette's like, so I think you have a drinking problem. She's like, the only problem I have is with your kids. They're only incorrigible because you let them run amok and, like, all this stuff. So she pops off at Lynette and it's like, oh my God, you have a fucking problem.
And I'm like, you're just digging your hole deeper and deeper. Yeah. Like, this is so brutal. And it was like, it's painful to watch. Like, but we kind of saw, obviously they've been building this up and building this up.
Yeah,
you know, that she's been drinking, and I don't blame her if it's only been 3 months since Rex died and 1 month since George died.
Yeah, but I have to shine some light on Mrs. McCluskey because she was a breakout star in this storyline to me. Mm-hmm. Like, first, when she shows up, super excited to babysit, loved the energy. She was like, I'm here to babysit. She's got her little knitting needles, and she's, like, ready to go.
Yeah.
And also that she didn't just call Lynette a bitch to her face after she called her ancient, like, behind mm-hmm. the very thin door.
Yeah.
And so good on Mrs. McCluskey. But also when Lynette sees Mrs. McCluskey after this whole incident and she's like, heard you lost your kids yesterday. And she, like, just calls Lynette out after she got, like, dumped from babysitting. I loved mm-hmm. it. And Lynette tries to play it off. She's like, yeah, it was just a little confusion. And Mrs. McCluskey goes, what exactly do you look for in a babysitter? And
I'm yeah.
like, damn, she's serving looks.
And I appreciate it, though, because she's yeah. right. Rightfully so.
And she says, I may be ancient, but I've never gotten drunk and last track of three kids. And I'm like, yeah. wow, this bitch is out for blood.
No, but I respect it.
I smelled wine on Brie while she was looking for your boys, and I saw her passed out on the front lawn. I just like that Mrs. McCluskey is out here. She's not holding back.
Also, like, where was Lynette when Brie was passed out on the lawn? Like, how come Mrs. McCluskey is, like, the only one that saw this happen?
It's probably super early. You know, old people rise early.
I guess, but Andrew was up?
Andrew was only up because Mrs. McCluskey banged on the door.
Oh, that's right.
And he came out in his little underwear.
That's true.
Like, were you fucking?
He just felt wide awake to me. Is I yeah. guess what point.
You could have acted more tired, Andrew.
Yeah,
yeah. So I have to call out Mrs. McCluskey. She's a star here. But we can talk about another breakout character that I hope is only here for one episode, and that's Gabby's mom. Okay, so Gabby comes home from shopping and sees some chick in the window touching Carlos's arm and being flirty. And it looks like a habit to me at first. And I'm like, I thought we got rid of Sister Mary Bernard. But mm-hmm. it's like, you know, when you put your towel in an updo. And I see yeah. that Gabby has a Victoria's Secret bag, very 2005.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm like, she really hit the shops. She's like, what the fuck, Carlos? Drops her little bags. And then she goes upstairs and she's like, oh, hi, mom. It's her fucking mother. So... Yep. Gabby's mother is a piece of work.
I feel like we get that vibe immediately too, like,
yeah,
right out the gate.
Yes, we get the vibe right out the gate, and it only goes downhill for her. And for mm-hmm. a moment you think that you can like her, but she doesn't redeem herself.
No.
So her mom is drinking a mimosa on this lovely Valentine's Day weekend, and she's like, let's all have mimosas. And Gabby is annoyed, and she's like, don't you have plans with Charles, your gold digger husband, mom? Don't you? And she says, no, I left him. And she's like, he was worth $6 million, which is the net worth of a lot of actors. So you get the vibe of his type of money. Mm-hmm. And she says, money isn't everything. And she said, Gabby goes, for some people, but we're talking about you. So,
which was a great retort. I love that.
Yes. And her mom tries to make her feel bad and is like, you could care about me a little bit more, you know, after this breakup. They're like, we feel awful. And she's like, well, I bought myself a little bit of a gift to take my mind off my problems. I bought new boobs. And she like wide opens her rips like unbuttoned, like, you know, a button down shirt. Like she just fucking rips that shit open and shows mm-hmm. Gabby. And she's like, no peeking, Carlos. And I hope that was improvised. Like this lady was everything.
Yeah.
No peeking, Carlos. And Carlos is like, I think your mom is charming. He says this later to Gabby, and Gabby's like, but don't forget that she's a fucking monster. So mm-hmm. Carlos is trying to like her a lot, which I guess you would appreciate from your partner that they like your mother, but Gabby clearly doesn't. So next thing we know, Gabby and Gabby. I guess that's their name together. Gabby.
Yes.
Gabby. Gabby and Carlos are at the doctor. And they're talking about trying for another baby, and the doc is worried she's going to have problems having a baby. So that mm-hmm. sets us up to the next scene where they're eating with mom again. And they're telling her about this, like, we can't have kids. And Gabby's like, not 100% positive, but it's iffy, like, we could try. And I said, also noting the background work of the slave labor girl, they put her in a classic maid uniform at this point. They don't even let her wear her own clothes. I was like, what is going on? So mm-hmm. that storyline just fucking ended, and now we have a slave working for them. The mom says that she's sorry for Carlos because he knows that he really wanted to be a dad, and he's like, thanks. Thanks, mother-in-law. Gabby says, don't be suicidal, Carlos. We can adopt. And he says that he wants to have children with his own DNA, and that becomes a bigger issue. Mm-hmm. And then the mom is like, what about surrogacy? Or somebody says that. And, you know, it could be pricey, but the baby will look like us. And this mom has an idea, and she says, controversial, and it is. It mm-hmm. is controversial. She goes on that she's in the best shape of her life and that she could be their surrogate. And Gabby is not fucking having this. She's
fuck
like,
no.
And she's like, you're on Medicare. And she says, I'm only 51. And I love this. Her mom does have some great lines, but she's a horrible person, as we'll find mm-hmm. out shortly.
Yeah.
Carlos is in on this, though. He's like, tell me more about surrogacy. There'd be a family tie. You know, this could be great. And Gabby's like, fuck this. I'm out. I have a migraine. I'm going to go lay down. And yeah. when I'm up, I hope we can talk about this like rational people. And then the mom touches Carlos's arm again. And Gabby is like, I fucking don't like that my mother is touching him this way. And I wouldn't either. I'd be like, mom, keep your hands to yourself. Like, get those hands in check. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Gabby goes to her mom while her mom is in the kitchen and she's tired of this tension. Let's just go have some fun. Let's shop. Let's go get some drinks. We can talk about the surrogacy and if we can make it work. And her mom is jazzed. So they drive to a hotel and her mom starts to get out and she's like, where's the boutique? And Gabby's like, oh, it's inside, like right behind the lobby. Just go in and I'll be right behind you. Then she locks the door and speeds off. And she's like, we are not talking about surrogacy. You're going to check into this hotel and fucking leave tomorrow. I hate you. Bye, mom. And she leaves. Well, she says, I'm pulling out. Watch your boobs. And I loved it. So now Carlos is like, how could you leave your mom like that? That's so rude. And this is, like, so Hispanic, like, no matter what your family does. They're like, why were you rude? And I'm like, probably because they sucked. And they're like, but they're family. Ugh. Gabby's like, no one asked your opinion, Carlos. And this is where we start to see some real development. Mm-hmm. And she says the only reason you care about her is because she made that offer about being a surrogate. And he goes, that was generous. And she says, don't you see all the fucking strings attached? The only reason she offered that up is because her sugar daddy left her. Mm-hmm. And if she carries our child, we'd be footing the bill for years. And he says, I think that you just hate her so much is clouding your judgment. And she says, maybe, but you don't know her like I do. And then we get an ETA. She ran away from home 15 years ago. So I'm guessing she is 30 because they say she ran away at 15. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's really young. really young girl, like, to be going through all this.
Yeah.
Ran away from home 15 years ago. Did you ever think to talk to her about the stuff that happened between you and Alejandro, your stepdad? And if we recall from Gabby's first episode, we see a little bit of this in her cold open that, like, something bad happened. Mm-hmm. It seems like it was sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And he says, do you think it ever would have done any good? And she says, no. And he says, how do you know? And she's like, because she knew what was going on and she chose to look the other way. And he says, you didn't give her a chance to step up. And I'm like, in that case, if it's your child, why do you have to step up? Like, you should just take care of it. You shouldn't have to have a chance, like, if you see what's going on. Gabby gets emotional, and this is great acting. And she says, because if I did, there's a chance she wouldn't believe me, and that would hurt a lot worse than anything he ever did to me. And Carlos goes over and hugs Gabby, and it's really sweet.
It's very tender. It's really nice. Yeah,
he says, she's your mom, and she loves you. And she's like, I know, but it's been a long time, and, you know, he says, you know, it's been a long time. Maybe you can talk to her about it. And I'm going to get her luggage and bring it back to her. So that's what he does. He goes to the mother-in-law. And she's, like, once again, always half naked. Like, she literally, I just got out of the shower. So great that you brought my clothes. And, like, with her fake boobs and her, just everything. Carlos brings it up. He's like, I need to talk to you about this. And she's like, I'll change. So I'll leave the door open while you talk to me about this super serious fucking subject. Mm-hmm. So they're, like, talking through the door. She's, like, half naked. And she, like, pops her head out once in a while as she's naked. And he's like, you know, I'm interested in the surrogacy. And mom's like, I know, but Gabby hates it. And he's like, she can be convinced. I know it. We just need to talk about some stuff. And then she comes out and was like, zip me up, Carlos. And then he does. And she's like, wow, strong hands. You must work out. And I'm like, he literally just zipped up a dress. Like, it's not that big of a deal. He says, I think you and Gabby need to mend some fences. And she's like, about what? And she's like, about all the stuff that Gabby went through when she was younger. And he's like, I think there's stuff that you don't know about. And I think if you went to her and asked her about it, you could fix things. And she's like, yeah, really, like, tell me what? And he's like, your second husband. When Gabby was 15, he sexually assaulted her. And then this is where we really just hate the mom. And she says, I know it comes as a shock to hear it from me, but I'm aware that they had sex.
The way she says that was disturbing.
Yeah, and Gabby seduced him. And Carlos is like, excuse me? And she says, she was always jealous of me. How many times I caught her wearing my shoes and jewelry, and I'd scream at her to leave my things alone. But no, she wanted whatever I had. And then one night, she set her sights on him. Believe me, no one got raped. And Carlos is like, she was only 15.
Also, like, what do kids do? They wear their mom's, like, jewelry and, like, play with their mom's clothes. Like, that's very normal behavior. Like, the way she talks is, like, so disturbing. But what's scary is there are, like, it's upsetting because there are parents out there like that. Like, there are women like that.
It's literally so wild. And so she's like, a lot of men have left me over the years. And I never knew the reason. But when he did, I knew exactly what happened, and Gabby made him fall in love with her. It took me so long to forgive her. And he's like, you forgave her? And she said, of course, I wouldn't have offered to carry the baby unless I had. And Carlos is like, what the fuck? And then he comes home to Gabby and is like, how did it go? And she asks, how did it go? And he was like, it was fine. I just dropped off the luggage and left. Mm-hmm. And they have, like, the most passionate kiss I've ever seen them have. And she goes, what was that for? And he's like, no reason. And he's like, I think we should look into adoption. And Gabby is like, seriously? She's like, I thought you wanted a kid with your own DNA. He says, blood isn't everything. Mic drop.
It's rare that I like stories on this show that are like one kind of one-off. Obviously, this is going to set up more with like adoption and stuff like that. But like to have her mom come in and have that plot kind of wrap up the way it did in one episode, they did it really well. Because usually that's kind of my complaint, is, like, it's a one-off. Yeah. But the development was, like, realistic to me. It made sense. I feel like Carlos was trying to, like have them be close because that's how he and his mom were. And, like, he couldn't understand why Gabby hated her. But having that conversation, he saw. And I think it also helped him understand why Gabby is the way she is.
Yeah.
She had to be like that. Like, her mom was a fucking psychopath. I, like, got chills, too, when her mom was like, they had sex. I was like, that's so disturbing, like, to hear an adult say that about their child. Like, yeah. Oh, my God. That actress did a great job at being a piece of shit.
Yeah, I just like the end that Carlos is, like, so on board with Gabby. He's supportive. I like that he was supportive of mending their relationship and then, like, seeing how truly fucked it was, like, was just like, fuck that woman. And like, we don't need her in our life. And
yeah,
they move on. So hopefully we never see Gabby's mom again.
Well, and at the end, like, we do see her mom like calling like another relative who's like ill. And she's like, I'm going to come take care of you. So she literally just like hops leeches from like family member to family member.
Yeah. So we see what kind of person she is. But yeah. Another bad person is Susan. And her marriage to Carl, that's going to happen. But before that, we get a lot going down with her trying to, I wouldn't even say stop an engagement, because the engagement between Carl and Edie wasn't going to happen. But just like literally the whole storyline is like her warning Carl that Edie thinks he's going to propose, and then being jealous that Carl actually realizes that he wants to propose to Edie after they're done being fake married. So that's the gist of the storyline, but it starts at the top after Susan finds the ring that Carl made her get. She's like cleaning it, and Doctor comes downstairs and he's like, Happy Valentine's Day. And that's how I knew it was Valentine's Day in this episode. And Julie's like, did you spend the night last night? And he's all fucking weird about it. And then that's when they set up, they're going to Shay Naomi's. And he's like, we can meet with a surgery up too if you want, which I didn't know you did scheduling too, mister. I thought you were just a fucking surgeon.
I know.
So and she's like, no, I have a wedding that day. And he says, huh? And she's like, Wednesday's the new Saturday. And I did like that line.
I know.
Wednesday's the new Saturday for weddings. Julie isn't crazy about this fake marriage. I think she says that to Susan again. But Susan tells Julie to bring the ring to Carl. But if Edie catches her, she expects Julie to swallow it. So it's just fucking stupid. Like, nobody cares. And then next thing we know, Edie's yelling at Carl that the house is a mess, which I get the vibe from a cold open a couple episodes ago that it's always a mess and that Carl sucks. So he tells Edie that he's going to be down to help clean up at halftime, and that he made reservations at Shay Naomi, and Edie's like, whatever. And she makes a dig at Susan. She's like, Susan sucks somewhere in there. She throws that in. She sees the ring in the marriage documents and thinks it's for her. And then Edie changes her tune. She's like, you don't have to come clean ever. Like, never again. Because she thinks she's going to get that ring. Then we see Susan at dinner with Ron. And Carl is at a different table with Edie. And Ron is like, isn't that your ex over there? And I'm like, keen eye, Dr. Ron, keen eye. And she's like, oh, yeah. And Susan waves, and Edie's like, ew, I hate Susan.
She's like, yuck, that riffraff over there. Like,
they just let anyone in here. And then the chef comes by and he's like, your souffle is already. And Edie's like, we didn't fucking order souffle.
I know. She's like so angry about it.
She's all like, souffles.
Yuck. How dare you be thoughtful and order something an hour ahead of time? Yeah,
Carl's like, I ordered an hour ahead because it takes an hour to prepare. She's like, I can't. I'm stuffed. And he's like, this you'll want to try. It's their specialty. And Edie's like, I guess I'll take a bite. And she's being weird as fuck is what I said.
Yeah.
Edie, you're being weird as fuck. It wasn't even like she was playing it. Like, she was like, I don't know what she was playing. I was just Nicolette Sheridan.
This fucking crazy.
This was your worst scene ever. I was like, what's happening? And she's like, I'll be right back. I have to powder my nose. And she goes and grabs Susan and is like, you look like shit. Come to the bathroom with me. And Susan's like, what? Okay. And Edie drags her away. And in the bathroom, she goes, I have some news that's going to devastate you. And she goes, okay. Carl's about to pop the question. Susan's like, what? Hope I haven't ruined your Valentine's Day. And Susan just is not fazed by this. And wonders what makes it her think that he's going to propose. And she's like, well, I found the ring. And so tonight he keeps pushing the souffle. So obviously he's hidden it inside the dessert. And she asked what the ring looks like. And my favorite, this is a good, so she redeemed herself from that shitty acting moment. She goes, I don't really know. But also it was 18 karat white gold, 10 diamonds, engraved accents. And I loved that she just was like, I mean, I don't really know, but like exactly this. So yeah. She's like, it was just a quick peek. And then Susan's like, that's his grandmother's ring. So it's a family heirloom. You know, he might just be having it cleaned or something. And even Susan's being weird at this point. I'm like, Susan, just play it cool. Act excited. Don't fucking say anything. You know he's not going to propose.
Like, I know. I'm like, just be quiet. Like, I don't know what. She always thinks she's like helping Edie. And I'm like, no, this is why Edie hates you.
Yeah. She's like, well, Carl's a lawyer and it could be for another client. And then Edie's like, jealousy is so ugly up close. And I'm going to take the high road and ignore your nastiness. Get back to my table and get engaged. And then the souffle comes and Susan like pops out and sees them. And she gives a note to the waiter to give to Carl and he gives it to the wrong guy, which also key part of the scene. There's epic background work in this episode all around. This guy reads the note and it says, be careful. She thinks you're going to propose. And he's like, I told you, I'm not leaving my wife. I'm just in it for the sex. And he like leaves.
It's so jarring. I was like, whoa, they like went there. The writers had fun.
So funny. Yeah. And then I said, meanwhile, Edie is digging through the souffle with her hands like an animal. She is literally like digging, like not even eating the souffle.
That was like so embarrassing for her. I was like, why are you doing it like that?
And also I have to say, if you're hiding your engagement ring in food, it's like 10 out of 10, always a bad idea.
Yeah, like, don't do that.
Hide it because there's a chance that they're going to put it in their mouth. And I just like, it's just 1 + 1 = 2. Like, yeah. I don't know like what you think is gonna happen. And so Carl even calls her out. He's like, why the fuck are you eating like that? And Edie's like, I thought you said this dessert was special. And he's like, when you put it in your mouth, like,
yeah.
And she's like, okay. And then the next thing we know, Carl's taking out the trash because I guess he cleans once in a while. And Susan is out there and she's like, psst, like, come here. And then they talk. She's like, why didn't you answer your phone? He's like, I turned it off. And I was like, wow, this really is 2005.
I know. They really dated it. I noted that too. I was like, that really dated this episode.
I know. And she goes, where's Edie? And he's like, she's inside. She's been in such a pissy mood since we left. I think he said pussy mood, but I wrote pissy.
Okay. Quick note on that though. Why the fuck, like, did Carl really not understand what Edie thought was going to happen? Like, she was digging her hands in the souffle, like, because he seems surprised when Susan tells him.
Boys are dumb. That's what the show's... don't know.
Yeah, they're really depending on that on this show. So, holy shit.
Carl's not the brightest tool in the box, mm-hmm. in the shed, or whatever. And then Susan just says she found the ring in the prenup and thought you were going to propose. And then Susan acts like this whole fake marriage was okay when nobody was going to get hurt. And I'm like, what? Like, nobody's hurt. Like, nothing's happened. Like, just because he didn't propose doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And so she's like, what are we doing? It's a lie. And I lost Mike over a lie. And now I'm doing the same thing to Dr. Ron. And look at Edie. She was devastated. I don't think I can go through with this. Can't we call this off? Otherwise, and then he's like, how are you going to pay for your surgery then? And she's like, I'll figure it out. I'll sell my car. And he says, this is your health. We're getting married. And Dr. Ron would say, you're doing the right thing. I'll handle Edie, is what Carl says. And Susan says, how? Her dreams exploded in her face tonight. And I have to comment, if your biggest dream is to get married to a guy that really sucks, you should reevaluate, because we've already seen that he sucks time and again. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say this is all of her dreams. Like, she seems like she has a pretty fulfilling life as a realtor.
Yeah. Also, quick note, they all keep calling Ron Dr. Ron, like the audience is going to forget who her boyfriend is or something. Like, it's really weird to me that she calls him Dr. Ron all the time. I hate that.
Yeah. And then, no, and then he's just like, oh, Susan is just being the most dramatic bitch. Like, not like you can go out and buy her flowers and everything will be better. And I'm like, nothing happened.
Like, I know. All that happened is he didn't propose to Edie, but he wasn't going to even, like, right then and there anyway.
Nothing happened. Yeah. So then he's like, well, then I'll propose to her. I was probably going to do it eventually anyway. And then, well, I'll have to get divorced before I marry her. But, you know, that'll be okay. And then Susan gets all fucking weird. And she's like, I didn't know you loved her like that. Like, okay, whatever. And he's like, yeah, she's a total package. And he's like, are you jealous, Susan? And he's like, she's like, no, how could you think I was jealous?
Because you're acting like a fucking psychopath, Susan. Like, oh my God.
He's like, it's not like I still have feelings for you anymore. And then at the end, we see them getting married at the courthouse and they kiss. And it's like so fucking stupid. So Hate Susan.
She's like so embarrassing. It's painful. Like her actions are like unbearable, if I'm being completely honest.
It's pretty hard to watch sometimes.
I want to skip her scenes almost, because it's just like, this is so pointless and stupid. Like, you're being so dramatic for the sake of it, and so I don't get it.
I want an anti-Susan. But meanwhile, one last storyline is going on with, like, Mike and Paul and Zach. So, basically, Paul and Zach are just chilling, and they're about to eat breakfast, and they eat, like, a hearty breakfast every day, it seems. They, like, sit down.
I feel like everybody on the lane does. They all wake up early enough for that shit, I guess.
They're, like,
I don't know.
Making, like, a whole breakfast. So, Zach, it's like, what's up with my mom and dad? Or no, he's staring at Paul and Mary Alice Young's wedding photo, which makes him ask about his own parents. And he's like, do you know what my mom looked like? And he was like, she was attractive, if I remember right. And he's like, she's an attractive lady, a handsome
that we murdered.
He should have said deal. A handsome lady. I love when guys are like, she's handsome.
She's a handsome woman.
Yeah, he's like, do I look like her? And he's like, not sure. And he's like, well, if I don't look like her, I might look like my real dad. And Paul pops off. He's like, I'm getting really tired of your fascination with two strangers that fucking didn't love you enough. He's like, stop asking about your daddy.
And
he's like, he's like, it's only natural that I'd want to know about my mom and dad. He's like, it's natural, but it's not polite. Shut the fuck up. And then next thing we know, okay, well, I'll talk about what happens with Mike. So meanwhile, Dirty Detective Sullivan is telling Noah, Mike's boss, about what actually happened with Zach and Mike and Paul and Mary Alice Young. Mm-hmm. And he's like, there was this chest, there was this death, they're not the real parents. Yeah, he tells them.
He's like, pause, we're going to watch season one of Desperate Housewives.
He's like, how much time do you have before you die? And he's like, their forensic evidence was gone and the chest. So, you know, they got away with murder. Mary Alice Young committed suicide, but Paul Young, that motherfucker's alive. And if you want me to deal with him, just say the word. And then he's like, nah, Mike is bringing my grandson here and I want to get him something. And then he goes, what do you know about those MP3 things? And Sullivan's like, they're real nice. I'd go with that. It's so fucking stupid.
It's insane.
And then Paul Young has 16 years to get my grandson whatever he wants. Do me a favor. See to it that Paul Young has a toy chest all his very own. And I'm like, now we're like on that part of Desperate Housewives. That's like mom boss season.
Yeah.
It like switches back in. Felicia, Miss Felicia's listening and she's smiling and she's happy that Paul Young is going to be motherfucking dead. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to be, as far as we know, because Paul's putting some milk away and there's a knock, knock, knock at the door and it's Mike. And he's like, what are you doing here? I hate you. And we've brawled like 5 times. And he's like, something I need to talk to you about and it's important. And he's like, there's nothing for us to talk about. And he's like, there is. So they go through that whole back and forth. It's like, you hang up first. No, you. No, you.
I know.
there's nothing for us to talk about. No, I agree, buddy. We have something to talk about, but there's nothing for us to talk about. So Mike barges in and is like, shut up. DJ's father found out about Zach and he wants to meet him. And Paul has a good question. He said, somehow found out, like you told him. Like, what?
Yeah, fair enough. That's the fair assumption.
And he's like, Noah's a friend of mine, or is no friend of mine. He's not a friend of mine. He's rich, powerful, and terminal. And I like that. Like, I want somebody to describe me that way one day.
Yeah.
Not in a sick way, but just like, he's terminal. And he watches me as grandson before he dies. Paul is like, no, can't say that's going to happen. He said, surprisingly, I agree with you, but Noah destroys everything he touches, and the last thing either of us wants is for him to get his little dirty hands on Zach. And he's like, what do we do? And he's like, you vanish until Noah dies. You know, you got to go. And he's like, if we leave, we're not coming back, and you'll never see the boy again. And Mike is like, I know. I guess that sucks. And Zach is listening, and he's like, oh my God, Mike's my daddy.
He's like eavesdropping. I'm like, you wish you looked like Mike.
I know. He's still looking. His looks are struggling. And then at the end, Mary Alice Young takes us out. She says, we all need a little help now and then, but it's always best to be wary of those eager to come to our rescue, because even the smallest of favors carries a price tag. Everyone has an agenda, no matter what they might tell us. And in those rare instances where there is no ulterior motive, we are so taken aback that we may fail to recognize the truth that a loving friend has just done us an enormous favor. Cue Bree standing in front of all of her little alcohol bottles.
Yeah. This is like a pretty cynical ending, though. Like being like, no one ever does anything nice without like wanting something in return.
I was
like,
everyone has an agenda.
Yeah, I was like, geez.
That was quite a marathon of like a lot happened.
Yeah, no, a lot. This was like a very eventful episode for sure.
Yeah, but is Danielle still hooking up with what's his face?
Matthew. As of right now, we're unconfirmed.
I guess they're still hooking up. I wouldn't say dating. I wouldn't give them the official title, but that is something we didn't get answers on. But other than that, I feel like we got a lot going on.
Yeah. Oh, my God. This episode has had it all, honestly. When we get into our rankings, I guess I'll kind of deep dive into that.
Well, I'll just say it for our fuck, marry, kill. I obviously have to kill Gabby's mom. Mm-hmm. Clearly have to kill Gabby's mom.
I agree with you on that.
Doesn't deserve to go on.
No, hell no.
Does not. For my marry, I'm going to have to marry Carlos because look at that. Look at he protected his wife.
This is the first time I've ever wanted to, like, marry Carlos, I think.
Marry Carlos. We can adopt as many rugrats as he wants if he treats me like that every day. If he gives me that passionate kiss that he gave Gabby at the end and takes care of her.
And, like, believes you and, like, validates you and, like, I don't know. For someone who doesn't trust very well, that was very trusting of him to, like, immediately take her side.
Well, then something else I noted is that clearly they've talked about her sexual assault before. So he has had a kind heart before this to listen to her and validate her before her mom ever came back and was bugging her. And like he knew about the issue and obviously supported her to a degree to listen.
Yeah.
So gotta respect Carlos there. My fuck is a bit harder, but I'm going to have to fuck Mike because he was very not controversial and he is willing to get Zach out of there so we wouldn't have to be bugged by his illegitimate son ever. Mm-hmm. He's like, I know I won't ever see Zach again. And
He's like, now I could shack up with Susan because getting Zach out of here.
We can fuck freely without that like being over his head. And also just nobody else was like really that fuckable this episode. So
I know, I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm aligned with you on the fucking Mary for sure. Like completely agree with her. I mean kill and Mary, sorry, kill and Mary. For the fuck? Man. Yeah, no one in this episode was like hot. Like just like noticeably so at least.
I mean, I thought about Dirty Detective Sullivan. But Mike is hotter, and they have the same amount of screen time.
I'm going to agree with you on Mike because I do think he's, like, an easy, like, go-to in these situations, like, where nobody really stood out, like, particularly.
Yeah.
Because Carlos stood out, but more in the marrying kind, so.
Yeah, you know. And I'm not, like, I do choose to fuck Carl once in a while, but I just couldn't do it this episode. I felt like he was stupid. And he married Susan.
Yeah, that whole thing was just so annoying that I'm like, I just don't really care for any of that.
Yeah, not about it. And then for my Housewife of the Week recommendation.
I have two.
Okay.
But neither of them are major housewives.
Oh, no. Mine is Mrs. McCluskey.
Mine was either Carlos or Mrs. McCluskey. I know we don't typically do men, but he was such an MVP this episode. Like, I just was so, especially compared to how he's acted in other ones, I was like, what a come up.
Yeah, we have to give it to Carlos because Mrs. McCluskey basically was just like Bree's an alcoholic. It wasn't that like groundbreaking. But Carlos went like above and beyond and like stood up for the one that he loves and like literally chose his wife over everything. So,
and I think it's just like good character development. Like he truly has grown as a human when we look back to season one. Like the way he's been acting this episode was actually like, it was impressive. And yeah, like if this storyline was separate from Mrs. McCluskey, definitely Mrs. McCluskey, but Carlos edged her out.
Husband of the week. So I'll have to go with that too. I agree. I'm glad you said something, but yeah, Carlos gets house husband of the week. And then now we're on to our Apple rating.
Okay, I think I have mine.
I think I'm pretty ready.
All right.
3, 2, 1. 3.75. Wow.
Dang.
Wow, that was a big difference. I for sure thought you were going to give it like 3.5.
No, I really liked this episode. I liked every part of it. I know we just had this talk.
Except Susan.
Okay, but I didn't hate her storyline as much as I've hated it the past few weeks. She was annoying, but like at least something happened. So I could kind of... And Carlos and Gabby's story was so good to me. Brie and Lynette's was actually really interesting to me too, that like they just stood out. And I actually kind of liked the Zach and Paul and Mike movement. It was short, but a lot happened in a way. And, like, it's setting up a lot of good stuff. And, like, I don't know, like, and I guess, again, I'm coming from a place of knowing what's going to happen as well. And so for our listeners that know that and also know what's coming, this set up a lot of great storylines. Like, this was a great halfway point in the season because it's really gearing us up for the rest of the season.
Okay, well, fuck.
But you have to rate it based on what you've seen. So,
yeah,
like,
for me, like, I'm just like, Susan was, like, it wasn't more or less annoying than anything else that's been going on. I found it personally more annoying because, like, when I was recapping it, like I said a million times, nothing fucking happened. No proposal happened. She made up an entire issue on her own. It irritated me because I'm like, Susan, you're over here crying about nothing. And don't get me wrong, I do that all the time, but like, not like this. It was so stupid to me. So,
no, I agree with that though.
It annoyed me no more or less than she has in recent weeks. And then I think that the storyline between Lynette and Brie was good because it talks about a serious issue. Like, alcoholism is a problem and it can happen at any age. And like, I think it's being addressed in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. But I also just feel like it was just the beginning. Like, nothing was resolved. You know, it just set it up. So for me, I was like, I don't know, nothing's really like going on. Like, I think I'd be way more pissed than Lynette was. I have to say, way too forgiving too fast, being like, do you still think you got a problem? I'd still be fuming and I wouldn't be like, oh my God, my kids are lying that you fell asleep. I'd be like, why the fuck are my kids out wandering around?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no matter if you were cooking or sleeping, your job is to babysit. Like, Lynette was too forgiving. But I did like the storyline overall. And then Gabby and Carlos and her mom, I have no problems with that storyline at all. And I liked Mike and Zach and Paul. So,
maybe I'll bump it down to 4.25 then.
Can't change it.
Because, fuck. I didn't like, it's hard because honestly, until we talked about it, I just kind of forgot about Susan's storyline. And so it's like, my brain just like, almost is like pushing her out. Just because it sucks that her storyline wasn't good because everybody else's I did enjoy. Like, I really, and while Lynette's storyline wasn't really about her, I just enjoyed it. And yeah, I would say Lynette probably should have been more angry, but I know that not a lot, it didn't get resolved, but the way this season goes is honestly very unexpected, and I'm just, like, really excited for you to keep watching, because I think when you watch as the season goes, you'll look back on this episode, and you'll be like, oh, shit, yeah, that was, like,
started.
You teed it up. Yeah. They fucking teed that shit up, so, yeah, I probably went a little too high with this one, but maybe I was just excited, because I just enjoyed it so much more than the past couple episodes as a whole.
Yeah, I did enjoy it, but I couldn't give it too high, because I just, I'm not sure that I'm aligned with some of the things that went on. And also no Applewhites. Like, we've totally left them. Like, we are missing a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. I just, like, I don't even know what they could have added to the episode. Like, that's what's... I guess now that she and Brie are, like, have their own relationship now, it kind of, like, gives her more to do. But I also am just kind of like, but what is there really to do? Like, I don't know. Like, we already kind of know what happened. So it's just a matter of whenever Caleb gets discovered at this point.
Yeah. So I want to just see some other, I want every element to be in place for like a 5, you know, but I doubt that we'll get that this season. I've lost hope, I think, but
yeah,
well, that wraps everything up, you guys. Thanks for always listening and keeping us honest. We had a listener reach out and say that there was a problem with our upload a couple episodes ago. So thank you very much. There was. The ending was missing. So it's re-uploaded now. But mm-hmm. we always appreciate you reaching out in any way. We've had, you know, other fans say that they like listening and everything, and that always makes us feel good. And you can always rate, review, follow, do all the things on all the platforms for us if you love listening to our beautiful voices.
Yeah, and, for sure.
Other than that, you can follow us on Instagram. We tweet every week. And yeah, we have a website. We have an email. But we just like having this community of desperate housewives lovers following along. I know that a show can really take you through hard times. So if this is your mm-hmm. show, we're here for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but we're here every Monday. We'll be here next Monday with season 2, episode 16. We're approaching the end, you know. I think there's only 24 mm-hmm. episodes, so home stretch.
I know. We got the final, like, what, 10 episodes now?
Something like that. Less than 10. Yeah. 8, I think it'll be. But so, yeah, always tune in. And before you go, we like to leave you with our words of wisdom: to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.